And it finally happened, Joe. Oh, you changed. Look at you all dressed up. You were on TV, weren't you?
I was.
But you're on TV every day here on WRAL Sports Plus.
Crazy, right?
I know, that is nuts. Get a little fancy for WRAL proper versus WRAL Sports Plus. I know why you were on television. It's because the ACC finally announced, after what seemed like something that should have happened weeks ago, months ago, maybe even before this upcoming football season, they finally decided to scrap divisions and come out with the 3-5-5 scheduling model, which, do you want to tell the people again that you proposed this to John Swofford years ago?
I did. I'm just glad they finally came around to it.
Yeah.
Of course, it took a pandemic for them to get here, and we probably shouldn't lose sight of that, because when they went to one division during the 2020 season, now Notre Dame was part of that.
Yes.
Let's be, you know, full transparency. This doesn't happen without Notre Dame, and they're not going to be involved in this, obviously. But that 2020 season where there were no fans, I think there was a tangible change in interest when you saw NC State playing some different teams, when you saw North Carolina playing some different teams, when you saw Clemson, you know, the flagship of this conference, playing some different teams. And I think variety is definitely the spice of life in this case.
Yes, it is. TV is also a big factor in that variety.
The number one factor.
It's the driving force. The product got stale. The product can't afford to be stale as the Big Ten and the SEC continue to run laps around the ACC in terms of revenue pulled in or in terms of television product. So some people didn't want to get on board with this because they liked the way that things were, but this is true in just about any business, walk of life, cities, etc. I like things the way they are. Well, if that's how you want to stay, well, then you're going to get lapped by progress in other places. This is why those who argued against expansion 15 years ago were always wrong, because the ACC would be left like a Big East basketball-only boutique conference. Now, there are some people, I will give them credit, there are people out there that exist to this day who actually would have preferred the ACC to become what Big East basketball is right now and screw football, which has ruined everything for the drive of money. I'm willing to hear that argument, but that wasn't the decision that John Swofford made 15, 20 years ago, and we got to make do with what we got now. So here is how it's going to work out over the next three seasons starting in 2023. So 2023 through 2026, there will be no more divisions. The top two teams will play in the ACC championship.
Which is what we saw in 2020.
Yes.
With Notre Dame and Clemson.
You will have three primary opponents annually over this three-year period. It's important to note.
It's a four-year model.
Four-year model. My bad. It is important to note this is a window of time.
You use the correct word. The ACC used the correct word.
Mm-hmm.
Notice it's primary, not permanent.
Primary opponents. So that means that NC State will have primary opponents over this period of seasons, 2023 through 2026, of North Carolina. Well, that makes sense. Hey, Duke is back. Duke and State get to play football again, like more often than not, rather than every 6 years or whatever it was. And Clemson? But what about Wake Forest? This has upset some people that the oldest rivalry or the longest played game in the ACC between NC State and Wake Forest or whatever the number is not going to happen. That's not to say that NC State and Wake Forest won't play during this time.
They're going to play a home and home over the four-year period.
Yes. They'll see each other less, but at least it's not going to be in 6 years. This has upset some people, understandably. North Carolina's primary partners will include Duke, NC State, and Virginia. So that rivalry,
which is truly the South's
oldest rivalry. Yeah. That one actually gets maintained. We kind of understood that was going to happen. And then Duke will get North Carolina, NC State, and Wake Forest. It's funny, if you're looking at it from a primary partner perspective, Wake Forest is the one who gets shafted the most because they're stuck with the Techs, Georgia Tech and Virginia Tech, and Duke as their primary partners. But again, it's only over a course of a window of time. It's not a permanent thing, and they'll see North Carolina in that run. They'll see NC State in that run.
They're not stuck with Virginia Tech, Joe. Virginia Tech's going to fill their stadium twice over those 4 years. So my guess is that was the team they wanted. I have not been able to get any kind of response out of Boo Corrigan or NC State about what happened with the State Wake series, but nothing happens by accident, okay? Let's start with that. If Clemson wanted NC State as a partner, guess what? Guess who calls the shots in this conference now?
Yeah.
particularly in football.
Yes.
So there are no accidents there. And again, it's a four-year window. And this is actually a compliment to NC State. This actually helps NC State. Would you rather have your season like 2017? You want Newman showing up and ruining your season the way that Wake Forest did? How about last year? We don't talk a lot about last year because NC State had a successful year.
They did.
But guess what? They could have won the Atlantic Division last year. Wait, what ended up being the difference? Oh, another loss in Winston-Salem.
Yeah.
So, listen, you're taking one trip to Winston-Salem off the schedule here. This is a win today for NC State.
It's funny. People are pointing out the... I think this series started in 1910, if I have it correct, between NC State and Wake Forest. But they've been playing for a long time. Neither here nor there. But put some respect on the Textile Bowl, folks. Put some respect on that. I put it like this on social media earlier today, and I think you and I are aligned on this. Regarding NC State and Clemson as a primary partner, would you rather lose in expected fashion to Clemson, or would you rather have emotional damage every time you see Wake Forest? Which one would you like? Would you like the high of beating Clemson like you got last year at Carter-Finley Stadium, the potential of the high? You know, Dave Dorn so caught up in the emotions, he says out loud, "The curse is over." That's what you get when you play Clemson. When you beat Wake Forest, you have two outcomes. You have, oh, you did what you were supposed to do, or holy crap, there goes our season. You tell me what you want on an annual basis. I'm just saying, that's how it's played out. Wake Forest has always been a house of horrors. Now, NC State fans out there are thinking, Ovia's, you ain't thinking like a State fan. You're wrong. You forgot. I can think like you. Wake Forest, if you really are going to miss the emotional damage provided by Wake Forest on a season in, season out basis, who's to say that Wake Forest still can't find ways to screw you? Who's to say that you need Clemson's help? And then they don't help you. Aha! Wake Forest did it again to us. So I'm just saying, it leaves open the possibility for that. But look, the ACC did what they had to do.
This is a win for the ACC.
It is.
They got this right. The question now becomes, when will the expanded playoff be adopted? When will the ACC and the Alliance come around to that? Because this is going to help them with that. That's number one.
Mm-hmm.
And number two, will divisionless football work without Notre Dame? Because the only sample size we have is the 1 year that Notre Dame was here, and that was the year that ACC got two teams into the college football playoff, Notre Dame and Clemson.
It's the OG alongside Joe Giglio. I'm Joe Ovius. If you miss anything from today's show, you can check it out on the Best of the OG podcast. Apple, Spotify, Google, you name it, we're there. We're going to talk to Bubba Cunningham, athletics director at North Carolina at 3:45. We're going to pour one out for the Pitt-UNC rivalry, the rivalry that he enjoyed so much. He had to preserve that rivalry. It will be no more annually in this new scheduling model that was announced today, the 3:55. So that's the big news of the day. I'm sure it'll be a major talking point in less than a month when we go to Charlotte for ACC kickoff. And one last point as it relates to nitpicking the schedule or not being happy that it doesn't work out perfectly. Here's the problem. There is no perfect solution. Ever since they expanded and there was no round robin or the ability to play every game, every opponent in the conference once, right? You know, an 8-game schedule or whatever. Once that went out the window, you were never going to have an equitable schedule, ever. This happened in basketball. Obviously, this is taking place in football. So you're really left with one option, and that is to make the best possible schedule for the conference as a whole. This is not going to please everybody, but here's the thing. There's no way to please everybody.
Yeah, but there's only so many games that needed to be protected,
yes.
And they protected those games. I'm talking about Florida State, Miami, Virginia Tech,
mm-hmm.
State Carolina, Duke Carolina. The rest of this stuff, like,
there's only
Syracuse,
one.
God bless you. There's no one you have to play. Pitt, a.k.a. the school no one cares about.
Yeah.
There's no one you have to play, Pitt, okay? So we don't have to protect anything of yours.
There's only one game that I thought needed to be played that is not being played annually, and that would be Miami, Virginia Tech. That's the only one.
And again, that's the beauty of not being permanent.
I get it. It's not permanent. So in this particular case, Miami gets permanent partners, or I'm sorry, primary opponents. I have to change my language here. They'll get Florida State. Well, yeah, of course.
Yes.
They're always going to get Florida State. Boston College. Yes, I understand that. There is history there. There's the Big East. There's the Hail Flutie, all that stuff. You're rolling your eyes, but I get that there's an element there. And then Louisville. Why do they need to play Louisville? Ah, I know why. Because Louisville needs people. Because it's funny. You look at Louisville's primary opponents. They get Georgia Tech, Miami, and Virginia. It's Louisville. Welcome. Like, somebody has to play you, and that's what you end up getting
with these situations. We'll ask Bubba Cunningham, but my guess is the schools submitted a list of who do you want to play. Rank the teams 1 through 14
yes.
who you want to play. That doesn't mean we'll give you that order, but I promise you there was some input there from schools, and it'll be interesting to see. We'll talk with Bubba Cunningham in about a half hour from now.
Yeah, I'm actually going to get on Bubba Cunningham because this is a lack of vision by the ACC. They should have televised that process.
Oh, a la the draft lottery.
Yes.
Yes. And with the 13th pick, North Carolina takes.
No, seriously, we did a chicken tender draft last week, okay? There's no reason why the ACC Network could not put all the ADs in a room.
42 picks. 14 teams by 3, 42 picks.
And you put them out there, and that selection process happens. Why was that not on television?
This is why we don't work for the ACC.
I mean, seriously, you want to sell more tax shavers? You want to sell more spurtles? Put this on television, guys.
I would have loved the reaction to Florida State taking Syracuse after being like, hey, guys, we're already playing Clemson and Miami, okay? We need the worst possible opponent to go with this. Please.
Oh, man. And the ACC announcing today something that they should have done ahead of this season, but it'll happen in 2023. They're going to a 3-5-5 scheduling model from 2023 to 2026 that encompasses 4 football seasons. Each team will get 3 primary partners. We'll talk to Bubba Cunningham about the death of the UNC-Pitt rivalry at 3:45.
Yeah, he's broken up about it.
He's very broken up about it. Joining us on the Heister Automotive Group Hotline, columnist, news, and observer, Luke DeCock. Luke, what's going on, man?
What's up, fellas? How you guys doing?
Are you as disappointed as I am that the ACC did not televise the primary partner selection draft?
I thought there was going to be a funeral for the Coastal.
We have all season to do that.
Like David Cutcliffe giving the eulogy, Larry Fedora's pallbearer taking the trophy down the aisle.
Swafford giving everyone a ribbon, and you get a ribbon, and you get a ribbon.
Coastal Division participation trophies for everyone. The Coastal Division campaign ribbon. I'm surprised. The only thing that would surprise me more is if they scheduled that and it wasn't delayed by a women's soccer game going 4 overtimes.
Yeah, now that would be peak ACC. Although you guys just gave me a good idea. You know, at the Super Bowl when they're bringing out the Lombardi Trophy and like all the former players, like when they do the anniversaries and everybody who's been there is touching the trophy. That actually should be at Bank of America Stadium, this ACC championship, where all the former Coastal Division champions
fallen
come out.
Coaches.
All the fallen coaches.
Paul Johnson.
They all get to touch, you know.
Beamer.
And they all get to represent the Larry Fedora Coastal Division that never happened, that they gave rings out for.
Al Golden claimed one of those, too.
Yes. We're giving out free ideas all the time to the ACC Network. They never take them. They never take them. Anyway.
Imagine, though, if they'd put us in charge.
Oh.
Whew. We'd have divisionless football a long time ago, that's for sure.
I believe eight years ago, Joe, if I'm keeping track of when you first started blathering about that, yep. Correctly, as it turns out.
They'd be making more money than the SEC right now. Luke DeCock, columnist, news and observer, joining us here on the OG. Okay, so yesterday, 3 o'clock, the Hockey Hall of Fame announces their latest Hall of Fame class. And Rod Brindamore was not included in that list, which, okay, fine. If we want to discuss this from a stats perspective, we can pick it apart all day. But we've hit the point with the Hockey Hall of Fame where we start seeing names like Daniel Alfredson, who is a fine player who played for the Ottawa Senators for a very long time and put up some good seasons, or the Sedin twins, and we start to go, well, wait a minute. If these guys are getting into the Hall of Fame, why is Rod Brindamore not in the Hall of Fame? And I'm really left with no other conclusion than, well, those guys played for Canadian teams in a Canadian-driven media environment, and Rod Brindamore did not. Is that like an oversimplification?
I don't know that it's not, because at this point, I'm looking for explanations too. I mean, I know so many of the people on that committee, and many of them, most of them, are really smart people without access to grind or hidden agendas. They're just trying to do a good job. And I've been on a bunch of Hall of Fame committees now, which makes me feel very old. Not that one, obviously, but it's a really hard job. And you end up in these sort of Faustian bargains about, well, maybe we can hold off on this guy for a year so we can induct him here, which is a place that he and his family loved. And it's like, you know, that guy doesn't know that he's on the back burner, although even if he'd be okay with it. So, you know, it can be a complicated thing. And the NHL, you know, only allowing four players per year, you need 14 of 18 votes. And there's no accountability. Like, that's the other part of it, is in baseball, you know exactly where everyone stands. In football, you have a sense of where everyone stands because they announce finalists and semifinalists, and you know going into the vote when they lock themselves in the room who's on the agenda. In hockey, you don't even know who's been nominated because you have to be nominated by a member of the committee. I believe Brenda Moore was nominated this year, but nobody knows for sure. I think there were years where he wasn't nominated. And quite frankly, given the composition of those 18 people, if Ron Francis isn't the one to put Rod Brendamore's name in the nomination, then that's practically blackballing the guy. So we know there have been years where he wasn't nominated, or we believe there have been years where he wasn't nominated. So if you don't have the vocal support of a teammate, and I'm not saying that's what's happening, but it's one explanation, it's going to be very difficult to get the other, you know, to get 14 of the 17 to vote for you at that point. So, you know, I think there's a lot of factors going on. The fact that all four people who were inducted this year on the player category all played for Canadian teams at some point in their career, three of them in Vancouver, suggests that that is a factor, mm-hmm. because there's no earthly reason why Daniel Alfredson should be ahead of Rod Brendamore or Alexander McGillney in the pecking order. It doesn't work. And if Guy Carboneau can get in with 660 points or whatever it is, and Rod Brendamore was every bit the defensive forward, two-way forward that Guy Carboneau was, and had twice the points, it doesn't make any sense. There are, I'm going to botch this, there are, let's say, 44 players who had 14 seasons of 50 points or more. All but one are in the Hall of Fame, and the one is Rod Brendamore. And Daniel Alfredson isn't one of those guys, and the seedings weren't those guys. And there's all kind, every player who's won a Selke trophy and has more than 700 points is in the Hall of Fame, except Rod Brendamore. And at a certain point, you have to figure they're making arguments to keep him out rather than arguments to get him in.
Luke Tacock, News and Observer, joining us here on the Heister Automotive Group Hotline. And I'm wondering, Luke, is it, you know, we see in baseball sometimes about personality, right? Like Steve Carlton famously was an irascible type. Do you think any of this is Rod's personality, or do you think it's truly has to do with the people who are in this nominating and voting room?
No, I don't think so. He never had that reputation. I mean, that may be the reason Tom Barrasso isn't in, for sure.
Right.
Because nobody could stand
example.
A guy during
right.
his career. Although I thought
that was your guy.
I got along with him fine. Yeah, no, we got along great. I mean, maybe birds of a feather and whatnot. But
Luke, you said it. I mean, I was just going
to
Tommy the B.
Do you suspect any – I was railing yesterday against the home cooking vote in the Conn Smythe Trophy in 06. I think you actually voted for Rod that year.
I had a story pre-written about Rod winning the thing so we could run if the Hurricanes won the Stanley Cup. Yeah, no,
do
I do think
that's
that
a
matters.
Factor as well? Or
I don't know that it's a factor. I think it would have helped his case immensely if he, not just this year, but years past, if he had won it and not Cam Ward. And I've said this in the past. I mean, I nothing against Cam. It was a great story. If the Hurricanes had played any team but Edmonton in the finals, and you didn't have, whatever it is, five Edmonton writers in the voting pool with five Carolina writers and eight national writers. I can't remember what it was then. I think it's 18 now. Would the Edmonton writers, the writers in a city, it wasn't Edmonton where Cam Ward was from, have right. voted for Rod Brendamore instead of Cam Ward? And I wonder if that was the home cooking there, the fact that the Edmonton writers might be more inclined to vote for him, or I think some of them voted for Chris Pronger anyway, who was sort of a lovable loser in that series, or unlovable loser, depending on your perspective. But there's no doubt, if you were around, and Joe, you were on the road,
mm-hmm.
if you were around in that series, and you were there for game four of the Montreal series, you were there for game seven in against Buffalo, you were there for game six in Edmonton, you were there for game seven in Raleigh, if you were around for the Devils series, game six against Montreal, I mean, all these road games and home games, but there were specific points in that postseason where Rod Brendamore single-handedly dragged that team across the line.
Yeah.
And one of my favorite stories is after the Game 6 debacle in Edmonton is Brenda Moore and Glenn Wesley, who always sat together on the plane, sitting there on the charter from Edmonton to Raleigh, grumbling like Statler and Waldorf about how they weren't going to lose Game 7. That was Rod Brindamore's team. Everybody deferred to him. Peter Laviolette deferred to him in matters of the room. And he was the Conn Smythe winner. And anyone who was around for all four rounds knew that as great a story as Cam Ward was and as valuable as Cam Ward was, Rod Brindamore was the real reason they won the Stanley Cup.
Luke DeCock, columnist, News and Observer, joining us here on the OG alongside Joe Giglio. I'm Joe Ovius. We'll close on this. We talk about relationships and politics, and that's how it works with these halls of fame oftentimes. And I see two individuals with the Hockey Hall of Fame that on the surface would make sense. Somebody who played with Rod Brindamore, that would be Ron Francis, and has that connection with the Carolina Hurricanes as well, as part of that 02 Cup run as well. And then you also have Bobby Clark of the Philadelphia Flyers, where Brindamore spent a good chunk of his career. You would think that those two individuals would be helping him, but is that not the case? Is there something else going on here that we might not be aware of?
I mean, no one knows what's going on in that room. I mean, that's part of the problem with the secrecy. If we got voting totals, a list of players who are nominated and how many votes they got, you know, we might be able to reverse engineer some of this stuff. But the fact that he hasn't been elected at this point, 9 times he's gone through the process. 10 times. Well, 9 times because they didn't have a vote. It suggests that he's not getting the support from one or both of the people who should be pushing him hardest. You know, I have very little doubt in my mind that Bobby Clark is... I don't know. I shouldn't say that because it hasn't happened yet.
Yeah.
When I look at the composition of that panel, I can come up with 14 people who should probably be voting for Rod Brindamore because they saw him do things that were worthy of getting into the Hall of Fame. But it hasn't happened yet, and now we can officially say, not just Guy Carboneau, but Daniel Alfredson. I mean, I think the Sedins are inevitable as a package deal. Doug Gilmore. I'm just talking about, and McGillney, too. I mean, these are two players who were unquestionably Hall of Famers over the course of their career, in my mind. And for whatever reason, they can't get the traction. And it's not that they're just that they're not getting elected. It's that inferior players are getting elected instead. I don't understand it. I think the Hall of Fame would do well for its own reputation to let some sunlight into the room and at least release a list of nominated players, you know, that didn't make it. At least we know who's they're discussing. I mean, if we find out that neither McGillney or Brindamore were nominated, it suggests that the whole process is a farce. Because those are players whose names should come up for a vote. You know, I don't have an issue with Roberto Luongo getting in. I think he's a Hall of Famer. I think he's a borderline first ballot Hall of Famer. But if Henrik Zetterberg gets in ahead of Brindamore and McGillney, then the process is just officially broken. Because Alfredson, Zetterberg, those are guys who I don't have a problem with them being Hall of Famers, but they should definitely be in line behind Brindamore and McGillney and maybe even others. And the fact that someone like Alfredson gets to skip the line just baffles me.
Luke DeCock, columnist, News and Observer. We appreciate the time, man, adding a little insight as to how that process works. We'll see you in Charlotte, where we can kiss off into the sunset the Coastal Division.
There's a question for you guys. Here's more free content. How do you organize the 2 days of ACC kickoff without divisions?
Ooh, that's a great question.
See, I'm speaking your language.
Alphabetically.
By championships, wins since expansion.
I believe it's by rock, paper, scissors for coaches who want to get the hell out of there faster than the other guys.
All right, bring back the golf tournament, and the guys who want to play golf get to go on day one, and the guys who don't, or vice versa.
Oh, does that mean I only have to go for one day then? Because I don't want to golf. Anyway. All right, Luke, we'll talk to you later, man.
See you guys.
See you, OG, alongside Joe Giglio. I'm Joe Ovies. Again, these are all television products. Can you imagine a debate as to, like, trying to get out? Because, look, for those who might not be aware of this, the ACC kickoff is July 20th and 21st. We'll be there in Charlotte. It's the unofficial start to the football season. Talking season happens in Charlotte. There used to be a time where coaches enjoyed going. They would golf, got to know the people who covered them, et cetera. It was like a retreat, right? It was a football retreat. But somewhere along the lines and all the commitments that coaches have to deal with, they started hitting it. What is the way I said it? Retreat?
It used to be a little bit of goodwill, right? There's a great story, goodwill, like between the media and the coaches.
And the coaches, yeah.
Right? There's a great story. of Chuck Amato at the kickoff.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like one of those, it was a post-Phillip season. And it was suggested to Chuck, you know, hey, maybe you should go over and like talk to Chip and Lorenzo Perez and some of the others who cover you.
Because things
you
are know, about just, to get real for you.
You know, just press a little flesh.
Yeah.
That was Lee Fowler telling him, mm-hmm. you know, you it can't hurt, right?
Right.
Can't repeat the line that Chuck gave back to Lee Fowler, but
wasn't happening.
He said he would prefer to be doing something else.
Gotcha.
So,
all right. Well, that's
why. But that was the whole point. It was like, hey, you get a chance to actually put a name to a face. And you know what you're less inclined to do is basically badmouth somebody when you actually know them, right?
Yeah, well, that's like all the coaches now.
Even if Ron Francis isn't an outward advocate for Rod Brindamore, that means it's like a Sith, right? Mm-hmm. You're either for me or you're against me.
Mm-hmm.
So if Francis is not lobbying for Brindamore in a positive way, has the same effect of him basically being negative.
Yeah, but Siths always come in pairs. So who is
well,
Ron?
There you could, but who, you may who not is, even need Bobby
who
Clark.
Is, who is Ron Francis's dark apprentice?
You may not even need Bobby Clark. What I'm getting at is,
who
I think,
is
I think,
his Count Dooku?
I think Luke is right. If Francis, who played with him and you know went to the Stanley Cup Finals with him, yeah. isn't advocating for him, that speaks more than anything Francis could actually say in that room.
There is. One thing you and I both know about, I'm not just going to say this about sports. This is true of just about any line of work. But for our purposes, because we are a sports talk station, there is a lot of small beefs, pettiness, mm-hmm. insecurities oftentimes about who gets credit for what or who's viewed as what when it comes to organizations or standings in the. And again, this is true of sports teams. This is true of our business. There's a lot of people who get resentful over perceived slights or who gets viewed as what and everything else, right? And I think that's probably extending itself a little bit here with Rod Brindamore and Ron Francis. Bubba Cunningham, Athletics Director, North Carolina, will join us in about 5 minutes. Let's answer some Hey Joe questions. Joe cracked the
door. All right, first one up from Samuel. So on a scale of 1 to 10, how funny is it that Duke is the school that gets to play the other three North Carolina schools?
I mean, it's a scale on a scale of 1 to 10, it's not funny at all. It would be a 1. That's good for Duke. You know, at the beginning of the conversation with the scheduling, we talked about Wake Forest and their standings. Giulio, you made the point that Virginia Tech as a primary partner on the surface doesn't make a lot of sense. But if you're looking at butts and seats over mm-hmm. a BB&T field, we know one thing about Virginia Tech fans.
They'll be there.
They'll be there. And the same thing here for Duke. Wallace Wade, bless Mike Elko, he's going to have to fight what all the other coaches have fought, including David Cutcliffe, who actually won a coastal division and was highly, I mean, for as far as my era of watching Duke football, Cutcliffe's era was as competitive as it's going to get, right down to winning the coastal division. And they struggled to fill out Wallace Wade. It is what it is. But if Carolina's playing there, if State's playing there, that's butts and seats. That matters. So I'm guessing that Duke isn't all that worried about the fact that Duke, that Carolina State are playing. It's good for them.
No, it's a win for Duke.
Yeah. Next up.
Oh, no, Joe.
From Kerry, which school will take the most pride in being the last division champ this year?
Ooh. That's a good question. I'm trying to think of like the most nondescript team to do it, and it just kind of go out with a whimper. That would be Georgia Tech. I think Georgia Tech's the right answer.
I wasn't even thinking about that side.
I'm thinking about the Atlantic side now.
Yeah.
But the coastal is more of like who in the coastal chaos gets to be the last one to win it, right? In the coastal roulette, who gets to do it? So I would go in the most coastal chaos way possible, a team that came out of nowhere to do it. That's honoring the division.
Yes.
That's honoring the division.
The team
who's
picked last to win it.
Yep,
yes.
That's what I want. Duke. Hey, Duke, here's your time. Do it. Okay? The Atlantic, on the other hand, I know where you're going with this.
Right. Yeah, I mean, NC State's never won it, so why not have the walk-off?
Yeah, but then they wouldn't be able to participate in the ACC championship game for reasons. Just saying.
Monkeypox.
Next up.
All right, from Mark, if Notre Dame were to join the ACC for football, who would the league want to make Notre Dame's three opponents?
Ooh, that is a hell of a question. Boston College would be the obvious choice, number one. I would then pick Miami as the second one. Lots of history there. Third choice, man, if you're looking for maximum TV exposure, you'd probably have to give them Clemson, don't you think?
Would make sense.
That would make the most sense.
But I could see Notre Dame saying, hey, now we got Miami.
And?
We don't need to play.
Okay.
I'm just saying.
Cool. They got
how
Miami.
These processes go.
No, I understand that. But, I mean, if you're Notre Dame, you're looking at Miami going, yeah, that's not a problem.
I think the thing that people are kind of missing here is, like, the frequency is going way up here.
Yeah.
So even if you're not a primary partner, you're going to see these teams a lot more often than once every 8 years under the old way.
Next up.
Hey, Joe, do college football and basketball coaches get texts from their significant others asking them to do something like pick up paper towels at Costco during actual games like most people get during the workday?
I would love to know if that's the case. Do you think Dave Doran or now Mike Elko at Duke? My guess is that Mac Brown's not getting those texts at this point. They're up there. They probably have things taken care of. They're good. I'm thinking Dave Doran and Mike Elko in the middle of a game getting a text saying, hey, on your way back from the stadium, we're out of milk.
No, I think at this point, every significant other is at the game with them. Mm-hmm. I don't think they're at home like, hey, honey,
but no,
on your way home.
But don't you think the significant others are probably home before the coaches are?
No doubt.
Okay. And no doubt. They get home and they're like, oh, you know, it totally slipped my mind. We're out of paper towels. Can you pick some up?
I don't think so. You know why?
Like we're out of coffee.
Yeah, but you know why?
Why?
Joe, it's not 1985 anymore. They're not making like $65,000 anymore. And at the risk of giving away my income bracket here, mm-hmm. like, yeah, if I made $4 million a year, guess what? I would have Amazon. I'd have the button on the Amazon thing.
Yeah, that's
and my
true.
Wife, for sure,
that's
would
true.
Have the button on the Amazon thing. It wouldn't be, hey, honey, when you get home at 11, I need, you know, no, there's a button. There's the, you can, I know I'm explaining how technology works to you right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, no, I'm fascinated
you,
by this.
You know, you can go on your computer
please,
and
Joe,
order things.
Tell me.
And then have it delivered to you.
Tell me
so
how things you, like you Instacart work, please, by all means.
I'm telling you, man, it's great things.
Wait,
now.
You mean I can go on the Wegmans app and order food from the grocery store?
Crazy, this DoorDash thing too,
this
man.
This is nuts.
It's wild.
This is absolutely nuts. Cue up the boys to men. It's so hard to say goodbye to yesterday. I got to harmonize because the divisions are no more in the ACC. Some key rivalries are not going to happen on an annual basis. We're going to have to wait with this rotation. North Carolina Athletics Director Bubba Cunningham now joining us on the Heister Automotive Group Hotline. Last time we talked to Bubba Cunningham, he was adamant about preserving the North Carolina Pitt football rivalry. But as I'm looking at these primary opponents from 2023 to 2026, Bubba, I do not see Pitt as one of your three. This has to be a very tough day in Chapel Hill.
It is. I'm emotionally scarred by you guys ridiculing me for the past month, but I'm somehow surviving it.
So, all right. So the day, we appreciate you coming on. We appreciate you coming on. The day has finally happened. This is, I feel like we've been talking about this for a very long time, but it finally happened. What I want to know is, what was the process like? I envision this like a draft, you know, like a fantasy draft. Everybody's in a room in Amelia Island, and you've got your big board, and they go around the room, right? And he's, all right, Bubba, it's time to pick your primary opponent, your first of three primary opponents. And you say, I want Pitt.
Yeah.
And that's what happens. How did this process exactly work with the primary opponents?
We need to have you in more of our meetings. You need to explain how we should be doing these things because that had nothing to do with how we did it.
Okay. So, see, I'm looking at it from ACC Network television content. Like, can you imagine if you televised a primary opponent draft? That would be ratings.
It's a great idea. Now, the way it worked is we actually had a couple of ADs on a subcommittee, if you will, working with Michael Strickland, who oversees football operations for the league. And Michael, with our scheduling partner, really came up with a number of different iterations of combinations as well. 3-5-5 was one. There was a 2-6-6. there were all kinds of other iterations that we were taking a look at. And then ultimately, you know, you just, you basically say, okay, here's a draft of 14 teams, and here are your three partners. And that's good feedback. And then it was more of a, all right, well, you know, we would like to preserve this rivalry, or this one's not quite the rivalry that you think it is, so we don't need it. Or we want to stay in our geographic footprint, or we don't want to stay. So everyone had a little bit different opinion, and we all expressed those. And we had, quite frankly, came down today to three different iterations that that we could consider. And the one that you're looking at is the one we landed on.
So you killed the Pitt-Carolina rivalry.
I'm telling you.
Because you chose Virginia, the oldest, and Duke and Carol and State.
I was building a traditional rivalry with Pittsburgh, and you laughed at me. And now it's gone.
I mean, Nathan Peterman, Ryan Switzer, great moments.
What I was trying to express very poorly, I guess, last time, I preferred the divisions.
Yeah.
And I still believe with the larger number of teams, the more you divide it into smaller divisions that play more frequently, the better it is. But I get the argument that, hey, you're in a league. A lot of our student athletes would like to play everybody, at least go to their stadium once in their 4 years. And that's what this configuration does for us.
Would you have preferred divisions if you had to play Clemson every year?
Oh, it just depends on who's in the league. But, I do think what we're going to see in the next couple of years, we'll have more balance. I do think having a race for two divisional champions, I believe there's probably going to be more teams in it later with mm-hmm. two divisions than there would be with one. And just quite frankly, for a guy as simple-minded as I am, not smart enough to figure out how many other teams are playing each other in my division when there's only seven in each league. I can keep track of that better than I can track of 14.
Bubba Cunningham joining us here on the OG alongside Joe Giglio. I'm Joe Ovias. Is the day of scheduling a non-conference conference game in the past, like, would, you know, Wake Forest and North Carolina have played a non-conference game? Is that done? Do you see that happening again?
I don't. I think that probably is done. Now that we're playing each other more frequently, that was part of the reason we wanted to do it.
Mm-hmm.
The other discussion and debate was, should we play eight or nine conference games? And as you know, there's four teams that play SEC schools every year. And then with the addition of a Notre Dame game every couple of years, some don't want to play that many, say, Power Five.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's always been a debate as well.
The Pac-12 did away with the divisions this year, not the schedule format, but just having the, you know, two division winners. Was there any discussion for that with the ACC for this year, Bubba?
To do it immediately?
Yeah. Not change the schedule, obviously, but the format where it could just be two teams with the best record. That's what the Pac-12 decided to do for this season.
We didn't even discuss it. We were always looking at 23. And quite frankly, I don't know if that's because it finishes a rotation. All I know is when we looked at 2023, there's only one repeat site for that year, which I think is another kind of driving factor to get to 2023.
Bubba Cunningham, North Carolina's AD, joining us here on the Heister Automotive Group Hotline. He's playing down his intelligence and insight here.
We appreciate that. We get the sarcasm.
But the truth of the matter is here, and I'll use Lawrence here, this move is made in a setup for when the playoff is expanded, is it not?
I said on the call today, I do not believe you can schedule your way into the playoff. You have to win games. It's just like basketball. You have to win a lot of games, and you have to play good teams non-conference. And whether the playoff stays at 4 or goes to 6, 8, 12, 16, I don't know what the number is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
But I still believe in those principles. There are scenarios where playing this way will get a second team in, and there's other scenarios where playing this way will get a team in that shouldn't have been in, and your best team doesn't get in. And we've seen that in other leagues. So there's not a perfect way to do it.
This is just like you keeping Wake Forest out of the NCAA men's tournament this year because of their strength of schedule, right?
Right.
It was all your fault.
And I did think I told you that, you know, when I listened to the baseball and State didn't get in and Ole Miss did, and heck, Ole Miss ends up winning it. So you're splitting hairs there at the back end.
Mm-hmm. Bubba Cunningham joining us here on the OG, Athletics Director, North Carolina. We appreciate the time, Bubba. We always appreciate you making time for us and putting up with our sarcasm as it relates to this particular topic. And I guess we'll see you in about a month at ACC kickoff.
Looking forward to it. And I appreciate the sarcasm because that's right up my alley.
We'll bring you an urn for the Coastal Division. A proper funeral.
We're going to have to find a way to properly honor the Coastal Division that was, you know, at the Super Bowl, they bring back these teams, right? These all Super Bowl teams.
I
feel like in Charlotte this season, as we close out division play, you should just bring out all the old Coastal champs. There's like a big moment because everybody's won it. Everybody in the Coastal Division has won it.
Well, when you present that to me, I will make sure that I extend my hand and receive it with my Coastal Division ring that you guys don't like.
Wait, which one?
Which one?
The 11?
The fake, the one you guys got or the fake one?
Both of them.
Yes! Now we're talking! All right. Bubba Cunningham, we appreciate it. We'll talk to you later.
All right. Thank you, guys. See ya.
You know what's crazy about that year is that both Carolina and Miami claim the division, they were both ineligible for it.
Yes.
But I believe Carolina had the tiebreak, had the actual tiebreak.
Yeah, technically speaking, for those who do not remember, this was during the Larry Fedora era at North Carolina. They were coming out of the NCAA investigation.
And there was a three-way tie at 5-3.
North Carolina was dealing with sanctions. In those sanctions, they were not eligible for postseason play.
Right. 2012 was the year.
So, through tiebreaker, they ended up winning the division. However, because they were not eligible to win the division because of the sanctions.
Well, no, they're technically not eligible to participate in the postseason.
Yes.
That was their reasoning.
Yes.
What Miami's reasoning for claiming a title that year is, I have no idea.
But Miami also self-imposed, if I remember correctly, that year for their own issues. That was self-imposed.
But still, you're taking a knee.
But
that was Devin Shapiro, by the way.
That's right, Devin Shapiro. That was
self-imposed. AKA John Ruiz. Are we sure they're two different people?
So they then were like, no, because we self-imposed.
We can still claim the tiebreak.
They didn't win the tiebreak.
That was the one that got me.
And then who was it?
Georgia Tech actually represented the ACC in the ACC championship game.
But that's not the Georgia Tech.
They didn't have to vacate that.
That
no,
they vacated because, again, the Coastal is filled with such mirth. I mean, look at this. This is what we're going to lose with the Coastal Division going away. Anyway, back to North Carolina. Larry Fedora actually got rings representing.
And I didn't mind that.
I didn't mind it either.
People got bent out of shape about that, but they legitimately, due to the tiebreak, would have won.
They would have won.
Doesn't mean they didn't play the season. They played the season. I mean, they didn't claim that they, you know, went to the ACC championship or anything like that. They claim that after the eight games were played, they were the best team in the Coastal Division. And by the rules of the ACC, they were.
Yeah. No, that's fair. I still call it the fake one. It's the OG alongside Joe Giglio.
Miami's is the fake one. I can't explain that one.
I put respect on UNC for doing that because it got the people going. It was provocative, yes. But it was fake rings.